You've arrived at Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's high noon, and this, of course, is Nation Radio. You can email us at nationradio@theteam1260.com. Lots to talk about today. Our guests on the show include David Staples, who's been doing some great work on scoring chances lately. We'll talk about the arena as well, and whether or not we should be concerned. Blue Bullet, a draft observer and commenter who has shown a lot of foresight and the ability to slot very well during the draft over many years. Met him and talked to him via HF boards, but probably over a decade ago, and an interesting fellow. Looking forward to that. Jonathan Willis from Oilers Nation and various other parts on the internet. We'll talk about team building, Atlanta's Man in Black, and the draft. Wrote some interesting stuff in a Jason Greger article on Oilers Nation this week, so we'll find out who Jonathan thinks will go number one and why it might not be Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Kent Wilson from Flames Nation. A tough week for Flames fans. Jan Eriksson's kid flew the coop. We'll talk about that and why the draft should suddenly be more interesting in the land of the saddle. Ian Walker from the Vancouver Sun will be by for his usual high jinx and tell us how things are going on the left coast. And Jeff Crichel from Crush Health Show will be in to talk about the NHL Combine and what it means, because it is a absolute mess as far as I'm concerned, but I'm sure there's interesting information and Jeff will pass it along. Wow, what a week of activity. Lots to talk about today. Game two tonight in the Stanley Cup Final, Boston to Vancouver. A lot this week about Boston missing a great opportunity to win in game one, but I think the conversation should have revolved around why Vancouver gained so much clearance in the third period of that game. That should be a concern for the Bruins and their fans. They played well for two periods but didn't have an answer to the Canucks' third period push. I know Thomas had more difficult chances than Luongo in the first two periods, but that third period, especially late, the Bruins were really flagging. Their power play is horrible. Reminds me of the Oilers under MacT, and that's a problem too, but they didn't seem to have the energy to stay up with the Canucks late in the game. If that happens again tonight, we might be talking about a very short series, which I think would be a surprise to most people. Since we talked last week, the Oilers signed Ryan Jones to a reasonable contract. Useful player because Jones can play in any line from 2 to 4. Certainly scored enough last year, 18 goals. I think that's probably a little much to ask him every year, but Jones took advantage of his chance. Good for him. Got a great contract, 2 years, and a lunch bucket guy makes good. It's always a good story in Edmonton. The NHL Combine underway. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins answering a lot of questions about his size, strength, endurance, all that. He weighed in at 171. He's 6'1", so a projection of him at 21 or so should be in the range of an average NHL centerman. He's never going to be Zenon Konopka, but he's an unreal playmaker, and I think he goes number one to the Oilers. Speaking of number one overall, Bob McKenzie mentioned at the TSN Combine show last night, the Oilers are basically deciding between Nugent-Hopkins and Adam Larson. McKenzie detailed a conversation he'd had with Tambellini after the Oilers GM returned from seeing Larson during the SEL playoffs. Tambellini was very impressed. McKenzie feels there's every chance the Oilers are making that decision, or still making that decision, between RNH and Larson. This jives with Jim Matheson's articles all year long, and it also makes sense when we read today that the Oilers might be talking about shopping the number one overall, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think Nugent-Hopkins goes number one, and the Oilers might try to trade up into the top eight to get another player, possibly a defenseman, but it won't be Larson. And one of the wildest stories this week to hit mainstream media, Gilbert Brulé picked up a hitchhiker, and his name was Bono. Okay, you know, the dad in me feels like I should explain to kids, you know, don't pick up hitchhikers. But that's one of those bizarre Derek Sanderson kind of stories that, you know, you rarely hear anymore. Like, what are the odds that somebody picks up a hitchhiker and it's Bono, number one, and number two, it's Gilbert Brulé. But he enjoyed the concert, as did a lot of people. U2 at Commonwealth are rocking good time this week. And the Magnificent Bastard signed a 3-year extension this week. Stu McGregor, his first 3 drafts could be the most impressive since Barry Fraser laid waste to the NHL in 79 through 81, as far as the Oilers go. We don't know that, and we won't for sure for the next few years, but the groundwork has been laid, and it looks very good. More stories to talk about, including Winnipeg and Colin Campbell resigning from being the policeman of the National Hockey League, and congratulations going out to Terry Jones. We'll talk about that and more as the afternoon rolls along, but first, it's time to welcome our first guest to the show, Jonathan Willis from The Score, Oilers Nation, and the Nation Network, Hockey Prospectus, and founder of The Copper and Blue. Jonathan, you are everywhere. How are you today?
I'm great, Alan. How are you?
Good. Are you driving?
No, safe at home.
Okay, I've got a few questions. Let's start with Jason Greger wrote an article on Oilers Nation this week with regard to the Oilers should or will take Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, and you got in there a little bit and talked a little bit about maybe Nugent-Hopkins not being the best option available. Who do you think is going to be number one, and who do you think should be number one?
I think Nugent-Hopkins will go first overall. That's certainly the consensus opinion among the scouts, and reading Jason's article there, he did a good job of outlining that all the scouts pretty much that he talked to had picked Nugent-Hopkins. Who I think should go first overall is a tougher question. Honestly, the more I look at these players, the more torn I am. I haven't really made up my mind, to be honest with you. I do have some concerns about Nugent-Hopkins, but he's undoubtedly a very good prospect.
Let's talk about those concerns. I think most people are a little bit unsure because of the even strength power play ratio points to, on the even strength to power play. One of the items might have been partly answered by Jason when he looked at how many power play opportunities were given to the Rebels during the year. We obviously don't know Ryan Nugent-Hopkins' time on ice at even strength, but that has to be a factor as well, correct?
Oh, absolutely.
So when we're looking at Nugent-Hopkins and a guy who can score that many points at that age in the Western Hockey League, is there a way mathematically, I don't think there is, but I want your opinion, is there a way mathematically to gain clearance for Huberdeau or Couturier or any of the others at the top there from what Ryan Nugent-Hopkins did?
Well, I don't know if we can give them clearance. What we can do is, if we look at the even strength scoring, we see that Nugent-Hopkins was way in the back when it comes to top prospects in this draft class. He's still a good prospect, but the numbers that he's posting at even strength are more the sort of numbers we expect from a player going in the 20 to 30 range in the draft, not in the 1 to 5 range. But, of course, his power play numbers cloud the issue a lot because he was so dynamic on the man advantage.
Plus, of course, the time on ice issue, if he's playing 3 minutes less a game, for instance, than Couturier at even strength, obviously the time on ice, the points per 60 at even strength would be impacted. Let's move on
Go
ahead.
What concerns me, though, I posted an article on the score here this morning. You probably haven't seen it yet, but if you look at his line mates in Red Deer, Nugent-Hopkins is second of four guys, and Brett Ferguson, who didn't play on the power play this year, is well back in scoring. He had more points than Nugent-Hopkins at even strength. And then Nugent-Hopkins' line mates were both within 4 points of him, and they played in fewer games. Mm-hmm. So when I look at it in that light, I have to wonder if he's really being held back by ice time or by poor line mates, or if it's not just a situation where at even strength he's not that developed a player as of yet.
Interesting. We'll go around in circles on this one, but that is a very good point, and I'll definitely read your item on the score. Let's move over to something you wrote on Oilers Nation this week. I found it alarming, just because I didn't expect the results that you got, about rebuilding through the draft via the what we'll call scorched earth policy. Tell us a little bit about what the results were and why you wrote that story, and were you surprised with the results?
Okay, well, I'll take your last question first. Absolutely, I was surprised. Now, the reason I wrote these articles, some people, I sometimes get the accusation, as I'm sure you do, that I write articles with a particular agenda in mind. I know what the results are going to be, and I'm pushing for it. But in this particular case, I had no idea what the results were going to be. We hear that rebuilding is the way to build a contender in the NHL. If you're a mediocre team, you should fall down and get some really elite talent so you can rise again. But what I wanted to do was see if that was reality. And so I looked at 10 last-place teams between 1995-96 and 2005-06, and then evaluated their performance 5 years after they hit rock bottom. And what I found was that aside from the Pittsburgh Penguins, of those 10 years of teams, none of them really used the last-place finish to leapfrog to a Stanley Cup win. Now, Tampa Bay and Carolina both won Stanley Cups, but in those cases, it had a lot less to do with this ensemble of top 10 draft talent and a lot more to do with free agents and trades and waiver wire people that they picked up along the way. So really, looking at 10 years of teams, only the Pittsburgh Penguins really harvested a good collection of young players and were able to turn that collection of players into the nucleus of a Stanley Cup winning team.
Two questions there. How important, number one, is it to get a Crosby? And I think Taylor Hall could end up being a Stamkos type, a real sniper, an outstanding player. But a generational talent like Crosby, how important is it to get that guy?
Well, I think we can all agree that Pittsburgh really had a lot of luck rolling their way when they won the draft in 05 there and got the rights to Crosby. But I don't know if that's what the difference is between Pittsburgh and these other teams. It's hard to say, really. But I think you look at a lot of teams. There are teams out there that win without a generational talent. And then if you believe that a player like Alexander Ovechkin's at least in the same ballpark as Crosby, of course, Washington has never won the Stanley Cup to date anyway with him there. So I'm not sure that it's a... I personally don't believe it's an issue that you need to have a generational player if you're going to tank and rebuild. I think it's more of an issue that if you're tanking and rebuilding, your management and your processes are in a bad place to begin with.
Right. And I think we sooner or later get around to the conversation of chicken and the egg. You mentioned about astute signings via free agency and trades. And often, I remember when the Oilers were very good and they could make a trade and bring in a Keith Acton or a Mark Napier, and it seemed as though they weren't giving up as much. I think a lot of what we don't see behind the scenes is the power of the player and the players possibly wanting to play where winning is contagious, you know, Detroit being an example. How long do you think it would be, you know, based on the study that you did, before the Oilers could reasonably sign a quality free agent without overpaying a la Habibulin or Surrey?
Well, I think you can do that every year if you're looking for a depth guy. Like Tampa Bay, for instance, this past season managed to snag Dominic Moore in the closing days of, or in the closing months of free agency at a very reasonable price. And he was a key contributor to their success this year. So that kind of player, those depth players that are so important for a winning team, I think you can grab them anytime. But if you're looking for a star player to take a discount almost to sign with your team, like Marian Hossa has the last few years to sign with Detroit and then Chicago, I think the Oilers are a long ways from that, because these players don't typically sign with a team that's had 1 year of success or 2 years of success. And based on the study that I did, the Oilers look like they're 4 or 5 years away from really being, from having the potential of being a top team in the league, if they follow league averages.
So would it be better for them to tank for another? I hate to ask you this question because I don't think I can take it. I'm getting old, man. Do you think they possibly should plan for another tank season?
No, I don't. And the reason I say that is because the object of playing in the NHL is to win games. And if you're not trying to win games, I'm scared that you get into this rut where you're at the bottom of the league and you turn into a team like the Islanders or the Atlanta Thrashers, where you spend so long in the bottom you can't claw your way back up, because your first batch of young players, once they reach the end of their contracts, they don't want to stay there anymore. So I think what the Oilers should be doing is they should be planning their escape route. Obviously, next year's pick is probably going to be a high pick no matter what they do. But I think the priority this summer should be to identify depth players, guys they can get via trade, reasonable acquisitions that can help the team improve. They have to be looking at an exit. They shouldn't be looking at another season with the first overall pick.
That's a very I agree with you completely. And I think it will almost happen because it has to, because I think some of these young kids are going to emerge as better players than they have been. Obviously, Hall and Pajarvi and Eberle going into their second year. I think it'll be a better year for the Oilers. Let's change the subject a little bit here, Jonathan. Are you surprised at how badly I'm kicking your ass on the ON playoff prediction?
Well, I think you picked Boston here in the finals, so we'll just see what happens.
I just wanted you to catch up.
No, I wasn't surprised. I'm just a little surprised that I'm actually anywhere near the top, because I felt for sure that a couple of my first round picks Tampa Bay and Vancouver were going to fall short in the final days.
Yeah, it was. It's been a very fun spring, and I'm hopeful that this series doesn't go quickly in the finals, because I think Boston has some stuff to give, but they need to not go down 2-0. I think tonight's game is going to be very important. You wrote it. I was very interested in your article this week on the Atlanta Thrashers and who the culprit is for their demise. I didn't realize until I read your article that Don Waddell had been behind so many what we could call, you know, unusual or negative decisions based on player personnel.
Yeah, I really think if you're looking for one person to blame in Atlanta, Don Waddell is the guy. The ownership situation there has been so fuzzy, so problematic, and there's been so much infighting between the owners that you basically had a paralysis situation where no matter what Don Waddell did, he was going to be in charge of the team. He wasn't going to lose his job. And now a good manager could take that paralysis, take a reasonable budget, and make a good team, like much like we saw Don Maloney do in Phoenix. But Don Waddell didn't do that. Since day one, he's really been the guy behind the team that Atlanta has put on the ice. He ran their expansion draft. He was on the scene before they played their first game. And the results really do speak for themselves. Even with some very high-end talent like Heatley and Kovalchuk, he was never able to put a nucleus in place. The thing that alarmed me the most, actually, was the year that they won their division, 2006-07, where they were swept in four games in the first round. The players that were playing top 9 minutes were guys that were marginal NHLers, guys whose careers would be over in a year or two, guys that really had no business being on the ice in key situations. And I think the only reason they won the division that year was probably a combination of very good coaching, a little bit of luck, and the fact that they played in the weakest division in the league.
Yeah. They do have, and I have often said that, you know, if you're the Winnipeg Jets fans right now, you've got to be thrilled, because the kids that they've drafted more recently look like, and I would consider like Brian Little forward, look like they're going to have some good quality talent there. Plus, some of the trades, specifically the Chicago trades, have really left them with a nice team moving forward.
Well, Rick Dudley's done a pretty good job, really, since coming in a year ago in turning over some talent and bringing in some key players, and I think there's a decent nucleus for him or for whoever they hire to replace him to move forward with in Winnipeg.
A few quick questions here to end the interview, Jonathan, just about the Oilers and the draft and how they might enter there. I've heard rumors that the Oilers are less likely to trade like players, Hemsky, Gagne, that sort of thing, and attempt more likely to trade picks like 31 and 19 and hopefully maybe add a player and move up into that top 8 or top 9. Do you see that happening, and do you see that being of value if they do it?
Well, absolutely, I see it being of value. I think if you can get into the top 8 or 10 in this draft, you can pull away, or with get a second pick in that range, you can do really good things with it. Whether it's realistic, I'm a little more hesitant on that. Every year we get the Oilers are going to move up to this position and pick this player style rumors, and every year it seems they fall flat. And then after the draft, Jim Matheson writes a column telling us who the Oilers were targeting and why they couldn't get him. But I guess I'll believe it when I see it.
What would you do 119 and 31 for, say, 3 and 8 or 9?
No, I probably wouldn't. I'd probably do it for 2, 8, and 9, but I don't think I'd be comfortable moving down to the third spot in this draft with that kind of giving up that kind of package.
Interesting. So everybody's talking. Somebody asked me, I think it was Spoiler asked me today about why I think there's a top 5 and then 3 to the top 8, which I think we can agree there's 8 that project to go in the top 8 or so. And most people think it's going to be Nugent Hopkins, Larson, and then a combination of Huberdeau or possibly Landeskog in there somewhere, and maybe Couturier. Do you see it being a top 3 race, or do you see it being a top 5 or top 8? How do you slot these players? Not asking for number 1 overall, but how do you slot them? Do you see a gap between 3 and 5, or is it just top 8 and who knows?
I was reading your take on that this morning, actually, and I think there's probably a lot of truth in what you said about there being a gap after there's the top 5 and then there's 3. Personally, I see it a little bit differently. I think I think Nugent Hopkins is pretty much a lock to go first overall, just based on what the scouts have said. And then after that, I think it's pretty much wide open from 2 through 8, because some of those players, Strome and the two defensemen that I think you had slotted 6, 7, and 8, I think those guys, any of them could make a move up into the top 5, even as high as number 2 if somebody felt they really liked a player. So I would say it's wide open.
I hesitate to ask this, Jonathan, because it'll probably take the rest of the hour, but where can we read you on the internet?
Of course, all the Oilers, or the Nation Network sites, Oilers Nation, Canucks Army, Flames Nation, Leafs Nation, The Score, Hockey Prospectus, and ESPN Insider.
Good stuff. Jonathan, thanks so much, and we're going to have you on before the draft because you've got some great insight, and I appreciate your time.
Really appreciate it, Alan. Thank you.
All right. Jonathan Willis from Oilers Nation and other parts as well. And one thing I like about Jonathan is that he has a strong opinion and he'll defend it. And he also takes a long time to look at things. And now I got to go read that Score article because it looks as like it's like a tennis match. It's a serve and volley time with regard to Ryan Nugent Hopkins. I'm enjoying it. I think it's a blast. And wouldn't it be wild if Steve Tambellini stood up there and drafted Adam Larson first overall? That's why it's the draft. It's fun, and we're looking forward to it. Coming up, we're going to talk to Blue Bullet, and also later on this hour, interesting conversation with Ian Walker from the Vancouver Sun. Stay tuned.